on a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
I'm really interested what the heck that could be.
Okay, we'll assume it's friendly anyway, okay?
There's two of them, and they
stayed
the exact same spot the whole time. They're
outside, like
say that.
Oh, my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh, Jesus, please be a plane. Oh, please. Are you ready for this?
The cameraman said, what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? It was a perfectly circular hit. UFOs over New York,
and I ain't too surprised.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that these days like
this. Suddenly, something else flew into the frame, fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
Strange day indeed. Most peculiar, Mama.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Hello, and welcome to edition 453 of Strange Days Indeed. It's good to be in your ears again with this, the first podcast of 2008. And a happy new year to you, gentle listener. This time, regular editorial contributor Dave Ferlot, a British correspondent and now publisher of the new magazine Alien Worlds, Stuart Miller, and an interview recorded in December with Katharina Wilson, abductee, author, and creator of the AlienJigsaw.com. And taking us home, Alfred Lemberg gives us his comments on Katharina Wilson. There's much going on in the UFO world as this podcast hits the web, so to keep up with current happenings, use your access information to read the UFO updates list. Well, we refer to it frequently in this program, and it'll probably save you from scratching your heads.
These are Strange Days Indeed on UFO News Radio. Here with his take on it is Dave Ferlot.
The UFO updates list has been, and continues to be, a source of information about UFOs that has no equal. And it boggles my mind that such an unbiased database of facts about UFOs and everything pertaining to them could even exist outside of some government building housing thousands of people working to gather all the information in one area. This database has been gathered and presented to us through the ceaseless hard work of one individual, Errol Bruce Knapp. Through his efforts, enough information has been gathered in the UFO updates list that I honestly challenge anyone to read through the tens of thousands of posts and still look me in the eye and say, there's nothing to ufology. UFOs don't exist, and if you believe they do, you must be one of the lesser intelligent people that represent a small handful of the population that believe in UFOs. Now, the reason I bring this entire thing up is twofold. One, I believe that it is high time that Mr. Bruce Knapp be properly recognized for his incredible efforts in putting together such an incredible database based on ufology. Kudos to you, Errol. It amazes me that you have persevered to bring this important information to the public. And there have been posts made throughout the UFO updates list by people that really need to do a little research. Perhaps even reading some of the lists to get an understanding of what it is that they are so wholeheartedly believing do not exist. I'm not going to focus on the recent post that got me thinking about this because the poster and even the person who wrote the article that sparked my thoughts are not of the rank and file who think that UFOs are nothing. Actually, they're quite the opposite. The person who wrote an article explaining why he believes UFOs exist was simply responding in kind to a statement by someone saying that 25% of the American people who believe in UFOs come from the lesser intelligent area of the overall population. I believe it was stated that only 25% of the population believe that aliens and UFOs exist as well. That by itself is a misleading statement because numbers have already shown that better than 50% of the North American population believe that UFOs exist. But even those numbers aren't enough because I find it difficult to believe that anyone who objectively views the reports, the photographs, the videos, and the news stories has to conclude that UFOs do, in fact, exist. Yes, people make mistakes. People try to pull hoaxes. And some people are a few cents short of a dollar. But when it comes right down to it, there are thousands of reports out there about something that we simply have to call an unidentified flying object, or UFO. What makes my blood boil is when all-encompassing statements are made about people that believe there are UFOs in our atmosphere, especially when those comments are derogatory in nature. When someone states that everybody that believes there are UFOs and aliens is from the less intelligent element of the population, it basically says that if you admit there must be something to all the evidence that has been gathered, you are one of the stupid people. But not to worry about that so much. At least those people have stopped saying we're crazy. Now we're sane, just stupid. I honestly don't consider myself to be all that stupid. Matter of fact, I actually think I'm relatively intelligent and capable of making rational decisions. That means that I can take time to examine as many of the facts about something that I can get my hands on. After I've examined the facts, I then come to a conclusion based solely on those facts. And therein lies the rub. See, the facts about UFOs are based upon testimony of people that have actually seen something they can't identify. And in some instances, based upon photographic or videographic evidence to support what they've seen. All in all, it is very easy to say UFOs don't exist, that they are a figment of an overactive imagination, or they are created by people who are trying to get one over on us, when you don't bother to examine all the facts. It is even easier to say that anyone that believes UFOs do exist are crazy or stupid when you leave all the facts out of the equation. But when you do examine all the information available to you, or do something as simple as read the UFO updates list, there can only be one simple, logical conclusion that you can come to. UFOs exist, and we are not sure where they're coming from. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Perlot, every week at this time. Strange Days, indeed.
And an interesting and varied take it has been this time, Dave, as usual. And thank you for the kudos about the UFO updates list.
Oh, very much deserved. It boggles my mind that you have done this.
Mine too. But then I'm a stupid person.
Me too.
Welcome to the Club of Stupidity.
Exactly.
Yeah. Only slightly stupid, though.
Yes. That was one of the things that happened over the decades. If you believe in UFOs, you must be crazy. So anybody who saw something, well, they didn't really want to come forward because all of a sudden they'd be admitting they're crazy, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
And now it's gone the other route. Okay, well, oh, you believe in those, you're stupid.
And who's the stupid one? Someone who's deciding that someone who's done the research is stupid, or the person who hasn't done the research?
Exactly.
That's the question. And talking of kudos, I also want to publicly thank Frank Warren for the nice piece he wrote on UFO updates and this podcast at his blog. I'm going to just ignore the stupid and the survey because, well, we keep on talking about it, don't we? The surveys, and it doesn't make any damn difference anyway.
No, the numbers are always skewed all over the board depending on what people are going to say one way or the other. The only numbers that are factual that I can actually see are the work done by Chris Witkowski.
Well, and then Brad Sparks doesn't necessarily believe that what Chris Witkowski is doing is 100% bona fide either. He's been accusing Chris of inflating the numbers for the survey. Brad's not a stupid man by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't think he's done enough looking into the annual Canadian UFO survey produced by Chris Witkowski and his sidekick in that project, Jeff Dittman.
I'd have a very difficult time believing that Chris is inflating any numbers by any stretch of the imagination. If he is erring, he's erring on the cautious side.
Well, he lists everything that's reported,
which
is not unreasonable.
No, not at all.
Whether it's night lights or bolides or meteors or whatever it is that's seen, he lists it. And then they take a look at those reports and then decide whether they're either UFOs or IFOs, identified flying objects.
Exactly.
Chris Witkowski, for those of you who don't know, is Canadian out of Winnipeg, Manitoba, and has been doing his Canadian UFO survey for years. And it's the only national UFO survey that's conducted annually anywhere on the planet.
Yeah, it keeps us up to spec as to what people are seeing and where they're seeing it and when they're seeing it, and it keeps the numbers flowing as far as bona fide reports.
And talking of bona fide reports, the updates email list has once again swung over to the discussion of the alien autopsy film. Although
yes.
I hit that one on the head again.
The alien autopsy flim-flam. That thing is going to be with us for another 10 years. It's never going to go away.
As Gildas Bourdais suggests, this man who claims to have been part of the production team that produced that footage can come up with pictures taken on set that will help convince. And as Gildas Bourdais points out, everybody who works in film has a 35mm still camera. Many people
shoot pictures
on set. And I would be very surprised, as I'm sure Gildas would and you too, Dave, if there were no still images taken around the shooting of that footage.
Yeah, there would have to be. You go out to a job site, you're automatically going to bring your camera with you. It's just part and parcel of it. And it's like, oh, you know, what am I going to see? Okay, hey, that's cool. Let's take a shot of it.
And Don Ledger came up with a really good point on the updates list about the fourth wall. That's the fourth wall that you never, ever get to see in movies or television because there is no fourth wall. That's where the camera is, the lights, the sound guy. Everybody, makeup, everybody's watching what's happening between the three walls of the set.
Mm-hmm.
And if you actually do see a fourth wall, it's because they've taken a break, they've taken down another wall and put in that fourth wall.
Exactly.
You never see a 360 shot.
No.
In one take. Unless it's outdoors and everybody moves around behind the camera out of the way. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Thank you.
As always, and I always say it, it was good, and I trust it was good for the listener, too. I'm sure it was. We'll talk to you next time, Dave.
For sure.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And the eagle watches from the mountain as the warriors turn into fools, and the dice are thrown on sacred ground.
As usual, every few weeks we head across the pond, and a regular contributing editor, Stuart Miller, lives there. He's actually become a full-time editor recently. He's now the editor and publisher of Alien Worlds magazine, which is going to hit the newsstands in the United Kingdom with its first issue in February. And presumably will make its way to North America and points around the planet, because there are precious few good UFO magazines out there anymore.
Well, I have been told an order came in from the United States. I don't know to whom. I'm guessing it's Borders, and I don't know the sort of quantity. In fact, I was supposed to be America will enjoy Alien Worlds magazine.
Well, Happy New Year to you, Stuart Miller.
And to you, and same to everybody as well. Happy New Year indeed.
That's a good news for the start of 2008.
Yes, I'm very excited, as you might expect. I'm just really looking forward to this. It's taken a lot of work, a lot of time. Inevitably, on the path to this point, when you look back at the progress you've made, that you can see elements of wasted time where you've gone in directions that you shouldn't have gone in for one reason or another. But I'm pretty well there with it now. And we're launching on February the 8th. And the omens at this point are good. And I'm really hoping it'll be well received by the public.
I'm sure it will be. And I have this feeling in my old bones, mate, that it's going to do very well.
Well, that's very kind of you. I hope it does. It's a different mixture to what's been seen before, by and large. And I think the time is right for it. If you take not extraterrestrial life as a basis, but UFOs as a basis, you can go in two directions with it, really, I think. You can either go towards the paranormal, or you can go towards the scientific. I'm not ignoring the paranormal, and the magazine per se is not restrictively about UFOs. It's about the search for extraterrestrial life, and that's really the point I want to make.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly encompasses SETI, a branch of science or astronomy, whatever you want to call it, that has certainly come into conflict with ufologists in the past, and also astrobiology as well. And I always try and avoid using that word because I think it's a scary word in many ways. I think it sounds highfalutin. It conjures up images of heavy science, and it doesn't have to be. And it can't be. At least it can't be within Alien Worlds because I am not a scientist. And there's no point in me writing about something that I don't understand. And there's no point in trying to foist something on the public that they won't understand either if they haven't got a science degree. It's very important that sort of stuff is conveyed, not in a simplistic manner, but to say in a straightforward manner.
Presumably, you're not writing the whole magazine yourself.
I've written a substantial part of it myself. I've probably not written as much of it as I think in my own mind I have. It's probably actually about 60%. It feels a lot more. So, yes, I have a number of contributors. It's on the website, that in the description of the first issue, there is an interview with Dr. Ian Morrison, who is an astronomer. He also happens to be the head of Jodrell Bank, the major radio telescope in the United Kingdom, and one with a very rich history in the space program, and a telescope that has also helped in the SETI project. Now, I'm not an astronomer. I don't know one end of a telescope from another. I'm able to ask Dr. Morrison the sort of questions that the average interested individual would want answering. And if you're talking to somebody who knows a subject and you have an interest in that subject, you don't need to be an expert in that subject.
Yeah, exactly. Well, here I am talking to you about your magazine, and I know nothing about magazines, other than I know what I like.
Well said.
I'm looking at your website, alienworldsmag.com, and the first issue is up there, exclusives, New Roswell Revelations.
Yes, not going to please everybody there.
We'll let them judge for themselves and see what sort of discussion it might evoke on the
I know one person who's going to really upset, a certain Frenchman called Mr. Gildas Boudet.
Ah, well, Gildas listens to this program. So Gildas,
be prepared to be upset.
You've been forewarned. You wrote a lot of it yourself, but I'm looking at people like, is that Michel Michaud?
Michael Michaud. Well, that's an interview.
Nick Redfern.
Yes.
Nick Pope.
Yes, no, I didn't write Nick Pope.
Is this an interview with Professor Charles Cockle?
Yes, it is an interview, yes.
And then Dr. David Clark.
That's an interview.
And Mac Tonney's, all in the first issue, along with, as you said, Professor Ian Morrison. So,
and more.
And much, much more.
And much more. Seriously, more.
Yes. Are you going to have regular columnists?
Yes. In fact, there's one that's come on board since I put that up on the website. I am going to include him in the first issue. It's interesting that this should come up because today should be posted up as a national holiday. It's a very important day because it happens to be this gentleman's birthday.
Oh, are we talking about a Canadian?
We are talking about a certain Canadian.
Uh-huh.
And the world should throw themselves at his feet in reverence of the in reference of the fact that it is his birthday. Yes, Mr. Paul Kimball will be climbing on board his podium and will be screaming at the world. But yes, there are going to be regular columnists.
And you'll be at what, bi-monthly or every...
Bi-monthly.
So presumably you're in the midst of putting issue 2, if not to bed, certainly committing it to a very large file somewhere.
I'm still thinking about it. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm well into it. Yes, I am. But I want to try and keep it as topical as possible as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's possibly one of the drawbacks about being bi-monthly. You need to really sort of make sure you're on the ball with topical events, which is a little bit harder.
When I was doing this program on a weekly basis, it was really easy to stay topical. But as time has gone by and there's just too much darn work that goes into this podcast, which people are probably not aware of, the interviews take half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour, and then it's a couple of 3 days to edit each of those interviews and then package it.
Yep. There's somebody that's done a lot of typing of interviews, drafting of interviews. I would imagine that you probably get rather tired of the sound of people's voices and also very familiar with their speech patterns as well.
Yes, with the regulars on this program, I can look at a waveform, which is the way the audio looks in a computer. For those of you who are not aware of it, I can look at the form and pick out the ums and the ahs real easily now, with you too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Especially myself. Lord, I get tired of the sound of my own voice.
Well, we don't, Errol. Otherwise, we wouldn't be listening now.
Well, this is true. This is true. And I'm extremely grateful that people haven't yet tired of the voice.
The other thing I want to say about the magazine is that it looks good. It looks like a modern magazine. It doesn't look like some dull old UFO magazine. It looks like it should be taking its place in the modern lineup. It's well illustrated. I've had a very good graphic designer working on it.
Just looking at the front cover, it looks good. I like the colors and I like the logo font.
Yes. Just coming back to something you mentioned a moment ago about when you were running through the articles, you mentioned Michael Michaud. It's interesting, actually, because he does keep an extremely low profile, but he has been in the news lately. He is actually a fascinating character because if anybody would know about the true situation with UFOs and American governments, UFOs now I'm talking about, it would be him. If you read his synopsis, a little brief bit I put there, you'll get the idea. The man is now a retired career diplomat, and he's worked at the highest levels within a number of administrations. He is fascinated and I would say obsessed, actually, with the concept of extraterrestrial life and the protocols that go with it. We do, in the interview, actually talk about UFOs, briefly. I was very circumspect about the way I approached it because I didn't want to send him running away, if you know what I mean. I got to it in a sort of roundabout way. His response to the question was that he believes that there are currently a number of, I can't remember if he used the word independent or private groups in the United States currently doing research into UFOs. He said no more about it than that. He didn't indicate if it was government-sponsored or where they were up to or why they were looking at them. But it was a statement about continuing interest at some level, about UFOs.
Well, that's an interesting.
Yes, it is. As I say, he's a very, very interesting person, simply because there's this contradiction. The reason I approached him was because he published this book about extraterrestrial life, about what happens with contact. I made a comment a moment ago, I'll come back to it in a second, about he's been in the news lately. If you keep your head down generally because of your previous profession, you publish a book, you're obliged to step forward and promote it to some extent unless you simply don't care how many copies it does or doesn't sell. And it was difficult. It really was difficult getting him to agree to this interview. It was an gentleman whose name I can't quite pronounce, so I won't, who is a SETIist, who not only believes, he's actually done it, he's started transmitting signals into areas of space where he thinks there might be intelligent civilizations. And Michael Michaud, along with somebody else, has resigned from some international committee that they were both members of, because this issue has not been debated properly, and it could potentially be calamitous. SETI, as it practices now, just listens. The next step is to say, right, well, we're fed up of listening because we're not getting anywhere. Let's become proactive and start sending messages out. Well, that can really open a whole can of worms. Michael Michaud felt that strongly about it that he resigned. I'm not sure, I can't remember the name of it. I haven't got the details in front of me. He's been quoted in one or two papers making comments about this, which is something for somebody that does not want a public profile, doesn't want his picture published. I do have a picture of me. I've actually put it on the website.
Yes, you have.
But I've not put it in the magazine because, actually, I'm not sure it's him. He made the mistake of appearing at some conference a few years ago, and somebody published a photograph of every speaker. And there was some confusion over the image with his name attached. I think what it was I looked at that image, and I looked at the image that I published on the website, and the two were of two completely different men. And I sent in these images, and also the website, where all the photographs were, and I said, which one is you? And he replied, I don't see myself there, but I would rather that you did not pursue this. So he's somebody that likes to get out there, and he's actually crept out of the woodwork and resigned from this committee in protest at the fact that somebody is sending out signals to, quote, alien civilizations.
Does he go into specifics in the interview about why he feels it's a bad thing to send out signals?
Yes, he does. I mean, he weighs up the pros and cons.
Oh, yes.
It's actually a fascinating book. He seems to have actually somehow managed to drag out virtually every quote historically that's ever been made in reference to extraterrestrial life by significant figures. And he goes back hundreds of years. It is a really interesting book. But also, what I found particularly interesting about it was he discusses the many ways in which contact might be established. And it's quite extensive. And also, he discusses, and this is a subject that's dear to me, to my heart very much as well, what sort of impact it might have. There are so many ifs and buts. That's the problem. You can't say, well, when we make contact with extraterrestrial civilizations, this is going to happen. It depends how that contact's made, and that's really the key.
The book by Michael Michaud is Contact with Alien Civilization, M-I-C-H-A-U-D, Michaud. I'm looking forward to reading that interview, and who knows if I can find the book online. I might even grab myself a copy.
I would recommend it. But bear in mind, that's only one fascinating interview in the first issue of Alien Worlds magazine.
Yes. Well, knowing you, Stuart, and I'm sure the listeners feel that they know you now, they're going to be as intrigued as I with Alien Worlds magazine, I have the feeling.
Well, thank you. The other big news, which really, unfortunately, I say unfortunately, has caused a degree of conflict in certain quarters, is the Ministry of Defense's decision to release another 150.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that is rife with discussion on the updates list as you and I speak.
Yes. I'm in a really awkward position with this because I am friendly with both Joe McGonagall and Nick Pope, and both have been very kind and generous to me.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like that, too.
I suppose I'd rather not comment, I think, on the conflict that's currently ongoing, other than to say that it's very, very exciting news. I have to remind you that a couple of years or so ago, I think it was, I remember when I was appearing on your radio program, cynically lambasting the MOD when it was announced that a number of UFO-related files had been discovered covered in asbestos and were going to be destroyed. I remember saying, oh, yes, yeah, sure.
Like, yeah, well, we both did, didn't we?
Yeah. Well, you agreed with me.
Yes. Yeah, I think we yucked it up, actually.
And lo and behold, they are being recovered, saved, copied, and they are going to be released. I was going to say I'm not looking for a smoking gun in these files. What will be of interest, I think, is the fact that these are files that have gone to DI5, and DI5 would have been interested in the more interesting cases. They would have been cases that would have attracted their attention for some reason. What that interest was, obviously, or why their curiosity was piqued, we'll have to wait and see. But I think it will be a tremendous insight as well into their thinking, their attitude, possibly. And I suppose a revelation, possibly, hopefully, as to the extent with which they did investigate or didn't investigate certain cases.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly look forward to this with great anticipation.
Do we know when those documents are going to be released?
Well, it's over a 3-year period.
Yeah.
So it'll be drip, drip, drip. They have to go through a lot of personal information to counter a comment that Stan Friedman made on updates when he was comparing it to NSA and CIA release documents, over 90% of which were blanked out. I don't think that you're going to find that with these documents, but you will get names of civil servants removed, personal details of members of the public that might have been involved in a case. That sort of information mm-hmm. is going to be removed. I strongly believe that a very significant percentage of the cases will remain, or the content of the cases will remain. That's part of the time process, just going through them and removing that sort of information.
Understood. There have been, and I don't know if you looked at it today, but there was an image of an alleged UFO over at Cornwall in the west of England.
I was going to bring that up.
Ah.
Have you heard the explanation?
Yes, in fact, I went to the Sun's website in the UK, and they have the original large image, and then they have quite a substantial blow-up of whatever it is that this guy caught on his camera and didn't notice until he was dumping off his camera. And I took the blow-up and dropped it into a fairly rudimentary art program.
And gradually feathers appeared.
Well, not quite feathers, but certainly a head and a beak and even an eye on the right-hand end of it.
I want to say this, actually, and I'm really perfectly serious about this, but I think this is not the first time that a seagull has appeared in a photograph when a camera has been pointed out at sea and has been mistaken for a UFO. Mm. And I think that this is a disinformation campaign on the part of British security services. And I think they have trained a large flock of seagulls to do this regularly. You're not really sure if I'm serious or not.
Well, no, I had actually heard that it was gannets that they were training.
But it's part of the rubbish I was spouting a second or two ago is true. This is not the first time that seagulls have been mistaken for UFOs. And if you look at the original photograph, it does look like a UFO in the classic shape of saucer shape. And it's a perfectly reasonable assumption to make at first glance. It's only as you blow the thing up that you can see the little buggers got wings and their head. And
I don't understand why people like the person that did say, well, this could be the best British photograph of a UFO ever. And why would you do that without getting somebody to just take a good look at the image, someone who knows what they're doing, as a couple of people have done already on the updates list, you know, and they've all called it for what I believe it to be, and apparently you do, is a seagull.
Well, prior to the comment that you've just referred to, as you can see from the Sun article, somebody's quoted in it, and somebody very sincerely on a message board explained that the press can be very insistent. They want an instant analysis if they ring you up and ask you about this. And it's possible to be misquoted, and it's also possible to be quoted out of context as well.
Well, yes.
So somebody was explaining how this sort of thing could happen, and particularly you talk with the Sun, you're talking about a notorious tabloid.
Yes. Much
oh, you
the
mean
same.
Its fame spreads to Canada?
Oh, yeah. Well, we have our own Suns here.
Yes, yes, I've seen the Toronto Sun. Sort of coming back to magazines, you may have been aware that UFO Magazine posted up one of its editions recently on the internet for free.
Yeah, I had read that, but just with the Christmas thing and then New Year, it's...
Well, now you may not be aware that Fate Magazine have just now. And I'm wondering why people are suddenly giving it all away.
I guess, Stuart, in the same way that I left a program up for people who go through iTunes to listen to podcasts, in the hope that I would encourage people to get interested and subscribe to the program. And I think it's worked to a degree, and that's probably what they're doing too,
yeah,
is they're just looking for more readers, you know?
Yeah. Can I turn the tables? And I want to ask you a question. It's actually based on a story, I think, that you posted up a few days ago. But do you think that UFOs are still seen as a joke?
Yes, I do. I went to an afternoon party yesterday. One of the people there said, "Oh, I hear you're into UFOs." And I said, "Yeah." "Oh, yeah, well, you know, that's a bunch of hooey and it's all stupid and yeah, the usual thing, in fact." Totally misinformed. And this person thought that UFOs are a joke.
Well, it's weird because your New Year's Day experience, complete opposite to my New Year's Eve experience. I and my good lady were invited out for New Year's Eve soiree. And during the course of the evening, somebody asked my wife, who was sat opposite me, what I did for a living. And she explained that I was about to publish this magazine. And obviously the next question was, what's the magazine about? And at that point, the whole room exploded. And when I say exploded, A, I don't mean it literally. People suddenly started engaging in the most intense, serious debate about extraterrestrial life, about UFOs. It was a really stimulating, reasonably well-informed discussion. It was intense. People were really interested and certainly took it seriously.
Well, most of the people who were at this gathering that I was at are fairly bright, and over the years we've had this discussion, but this particular person might be somewhat clever, but not particularly bright.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean.
As with many people, they formed their opinion and weren't going to bother to look into it too deeply and really just wanted to deride what it was that I was into.
This is interesting because I think actually you are getting right to the crux of this, and it's poor reflection on us because ufologists, if you want to label us as that, decry the giggle factor, the fun that people make of the subject and the abuse we get. But you've got to turn this around. Why do you think this guy felt as he feels?
In years past, I would have asked him about that, and I just decided it wasn't worth it.
You wouldn't have got a sensible answer.
No.
But
no.
The one thing he wouldn't have said was, well, the whole concept absolutely terrifies me. I'm intellectually incapable of addressing it sensibly.
Exactly, exactly.
And
yes.
So it's just much easier to act like a buffoon.
Yes.
And to make fun of you.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was really honest, I would admit that it absolutely scares the watsits out of me.
Yeah. I've seen too many movies like Independence Day and Attack of the Pod People and all of those other wonderful science fiction movies that scare the hell out of people.
It's going to start creeping more and more into our lives. I have little doubt. I stand to be corrected. I'm not that adamant about this, that everything stands or falls on this, but I strongly am of the opinion that this year we will have confirmation of microbial life on Mars. Now, obviously, that is not the same thing as aliens attacking planet Earth. If that fact is confirmed, you watch how the press deal with it. And that concept will start to raise its head slowly. It's kind of going to be there in the background. Well, you know, okay, might not be very interesting extraterrestrial life, but it's there. And if it's there on our planetary next-door neighbour, then, well, what else is out there? And it's going to go like that. It's going to creep in.
Whatever happened to the discussion about the tubes on Mars and the bushes on Mars? And let's not even touch the face on Mars.
I think you've asked me this before. I'm not saying definitely, but they were explained away by NASA. And the fact that the issue is no longer being discussed. I think if there was any interesting substance to it, I don't think, you know, people would have let it go because there are too many people just poised permanently to seize on anything.
I don't recall seeing any explanations in it. And how the hell do you explain those tubes away?
I can't remember the explanation that was given. Well, I guess a bit. So, well, we don't really know. We're not sure what they are. People just didn't continue to see anything of potential significance there. We've had this story this week about the doorway on Mars hewn out of this rock face. You very kindly put it up.
You very kindly sent it to me and I put it up, yeah.
But what was interesting was that this didn't appear on Richard Hoagland's site. This appeared on a respected space stroke scientific site. Now, okay, their editorial on it was cautious, as you'd expect. But one image of the door, I'm looking at it now, actually, at this moment, it certainly looks artificial. Having said that, I mean, I think we all know, if you study this sort of thing, it is amazing what nature is accredited with in terms of producing shapes that are common to the human eye and familiar to the human eye, but apparently are just produced at random through weather formation and so on and so forth. But as you look at the thing, it looks like a huge doorway into a cave system. When it's magnified a bit more, you can see it almost certainly is a natural formation. But it is a bit weird. It's as interesting for the fact that this particular website decided to hoist this one up, like as anything else. I think people are getting very excited about Mars, actually.
The magazine hits the stands, what, the first week in February?
February the 8th in the UK.
And for those of you who would like to know more about the magazine, alienworldsmag.com is the website. And you can also subscribe there, too. Can people use PayPal to subscribe? Because almost everybody who listens to this podcast has PayPal. Take advantage of your PayPal and the website alienworldsmag.com. Go subscribe to it for a year at least.
Thank you.
Stuart Miller, thank you, sir. I've been wishing everybody a happy, prosperous, and meritorious new year. It sounds as if you might have all three this year.
That would certainly be very nice. I don't expect it.
Have yourself a splendid few weeks between now and then. Don't make yourself two bananas.
Well,
putting the
you.
Next issue together. And we'll talk again in a few weeks.
Thank you very much, Al. All the best.
Bye-bye.
I woke up in my room late one night to a light that was way too bright. I looked around and screamed in fright when I beheld an eerie sight. Three little gray things looked at me as I began to float. Silently I tried to move and call for help. Paralyzed, I couldn't even yelp. Alien abduction, like gravity inflection. Loaded me to their ship sail. When they asked me for an introduction, told her my name was Roswell. I could hear the telepathic screams.
A woman that I've always been interested by is Katarina Wilson. She has written a couple of books about her life as an abductee, The Alien Jigsaw, and The Alien Jigsaw Researcher's Supplement, two hard copy books. I had read The Alien Jigsaw, must be about 10 years ago, and found it really, really intriguing after having gotten back into this whole UFO thing as a result of stumbling across Whitley Strieber on television. Got into The Alien Jigsaw by our guest, Katarina Wilson. Hello, Katarina. Welcome to Strange Days Indeed. It's good to finally, because I know that for quite a while you were laying low, it's good to finally have you on the program.
Thank you, and yes, I was, and thank you for inviting me. It's good to be here.
What prompted you to lie low for a while?
Just needing a break away from the day-to-day phenomenon. Not that you can really get away from the phenomenon itself.
Right.
The conferences and the dealing with the people and other abductees on a regular basis. Sometimes you just have to take a break to keep your sanity.
Which you did.
I hope I've kept it.
I was about to say, you sound quite sane. Although there are people out there who doubt the sanity of anybody who's involved with anything to do with UFOs and the phenomena that surround those. Let's go back in time. I know that you had had some quite freaky experiences, would be the way to describe them, when you were younger. Can we go back to your first recollections of the strangeness that was going on in your life?
The first that I remember was when I was about 6 or 7 years old, and I would have what I thought was a recurring dream that I today believe that they were actual experiences. I would sense a presence in my bedroom at night, and then I would find myself staring up at what was probably a holographic image, but it was a chocolate cake. That was one of the best things in the world to me back then. And it was more of an image to just fixate my mind on, or my eyes on something, other than what was really going on around me. My next memory would be of floating, and I could look down and see this gravel road that we lived somewhat close to. I used to have to travel on it to ride my bike to school. And I would have that recurring experience, and then I would find myself in a place that just seemed, I used to think it was God talking to me. That's how different it was. It was like being in a totally different space. And I'd see these other pods floating. They were pod-shaped or actually looked like some wooden beads I played with as a child, but they were about my size or larger. And I'm kind of suspecting that those might have been other people, because I would be floating in a standing up position, and I believe that these other objects I saw were actually other people also floating in the same direction that I was floating, and we were all heading towards something with what at the time to me sounded like a mechanical voice inside my head, very deep. I used to think it was God talking to me, but I never could really remember what they said or what he said.
Mm-hmm.
So that was probably the earliest, six or seven, I think it was around six.
Did you consciously recollect those dreams, in quotation marks, or did those experiences come out subsequently?
I remember that as a child happening a lot, and I just assumed, well, I'm talking to God, and I'm going to see God, and because who else could have that kind of power and control over you to physically lift you up and make you float. I remembered it as a child, and it happened frequently, and it was pretty scary.
That continued on through what?
That happened
through the years?
Several times in my childhood. When I was 16, that would be 19, I'm giving my age away here, 1976, I had a sighting along with several children in my neighborhood of three, what I called at the time, hamburger-shaped crafts, with lights circling around their midsection. The father of the couple I was babysitting for was bringing me home, and it was just down the street from where I lived. And we looked up, and he said, what is that? And I said, I don't know. The whole time he was driving, he had his head out the window looking up, and all these kids were out in the cul-de-sac where I lived. And so I got out of the car and just was fixated on these three objects along with everybody else. And incidentally, the interesting thing to me was no adults were outside. After this man dropped me off, he went home. I went inside, tried to get my parents and my older sister to come out. Look at this, look at this. And I remember my father sitting at the table reading the newspaper and just calmly looking up at me and saying, well, I know that you think you're seeing something, but you really don't, or he just wasn't interested. So nobody came outside except me and all the kids.
Mm.
And another ironic thing is these were all the kids I babysat for. I believe I was the oldest one out there. So I was 16. I babysat for all these kids. And here I am outside looking at three UFOs or three crafts with all these kids. And this lasted about 45 minutes.
Was your dad at the time a naturally curious man, or he was much more interested in what he was doing?
He has a PhD, a professor, so very scientifically oriented, not interested in the phenomenon, never was, still isn't. It's just some people you just got to see to believe, and they weren't even interested in coming out, and I'm sort of suspecting that maybe there might have been some kind of control over the adults in that area to keep them from coming out.
That's what I was angling at.
Yeah, at the time, I just thought, my God, how can you not want to come out here? The world's changing. Everything's going to be different. The next day, I went to school, and I started telling my friends, because I expected this to be all over the papers, and people just looked at me like, what? And I just shut up after that. But today, I believe that there was some kind of control over the adults, and that's probably why they didn't, you know, it's not logical for you to ignore your kid when they're saying, oh, look, there's three things out here you got to see. They're flying in the sky. And they, you know, silver, structured, not just light.
Did you talk to the kids who also witnessed the three hamburger-shaped craft afterward about their experience then and perhaps the possibility that they had too been taken?
No, I didn't. And that, in and of itself, is very telling. At that time, I didn't know that these things would actually take you away. I thought, this is something you see in the sky.
Uh-huh.
And even remembering my childhood experiences, I didn't put two and two together, mm-hmm. even at that time. It would be my mid-20s before I was able to mentally do the eureka moment thing, you know, this is what it was.
Between 16 and mid-20s, did you have any other abduction experiences that you're aware of?
Oh, yes. Oh, one that comes to mind real strongly was when I was at music school in the Midwest. It was about a 15 to 17-hour drive from where I was living on the Gulf Coast at the time, depending on the weather. And my father had come up to pick me up and bring me back home during a break. At the time, he had a pickup truck. We were probably maybe 3 or 4 hours away from home. We had to go slow. There's so much fog all of a sudden. And I remember all these deer surrounding the truck. And then all of a sudden it was like the truck was floating. And my father was trying to maneuver through this thick fog with these deer peering through the windows. And I was so afraid that we might actually hit one, and because I just love animals. But I remember the odd thing was that the sensation of the floating and then seeing a deer in the front window, which meant it would have had to have been standing on the hood and crouching down. And I'm thinking, no, deer can't really do that. That's something that really I'll never forget, because I don't think those were deer. And the eyes of deer are similar to the eyes of certain types of grays. I think we were several hours late getting home, and it was like 3 a.m. by the time we got back, and my mother was beside herself, and we just got home. It's like, went straight to bed, didn't talk, nothing, just like, oh, I just want to go to bed. That was my early 20s.
Just to stay with that for a moment, mm-hmm. Your father was apparently taken along with you.
That's what it was saying. I tried to talk to him about it several years later, and he doesn't remember anything.
Well, that's fairly typical, too, isn't it?
He doesn't remember anything. And I have seen him in a couple of my experiences, but it's been brief, and he's been extremely upset, just unlike my father, just terribly upset, frightened, shaking. But it's only been a couple of times that I've seen him.
Adds credence to the stories of cross-generational abduction.
Right.
Where parents, grandparents, brothers, siblings, sisters are all taken at one time or another.
Yeah.
Does your mother pay any attention to you and your experiences?
Well, we talked about it before I wrote Alien Jigsaw. During my awakening, everything clicked and then it came together, and this was around 1983, 84. I asked her about it. I'd heard the Charles Hicks and the Pascagoula case story. I'd read about that in the paper. And I said, you know, those two guys in Mississippi, I think something really did happen to them. I think there's something to that story. And she just blurted out, oh, well, your father was probably an alien. And that just floored me, because she's never used the word alien before. And immigrants are immigrants, because she came over from Germany after the war. And alien, that word just wasn't in her vocabulary. And I looked at her and I said, why did you say say that? Why did you use that particular word? And she just looked at me and she said, well, Katerina, because you've just always been so different. You're so different from your brother and sister. And I think she kind of said it, not really thinking about it, and it just kind of blurted out because I think it was something that she knew. There was something different about me. I'm not saying that my real father's an alien, but she had a very unusual pregnancy with me. We have talked about it, to get back to your question, but not lately. When I took the break, I took some years off and tried to get out of this, and I told them that, oh, no, I'm not doing that anymore, so I could seem more normal to the family. I'm still doing it, so we don't talk about it anymore. Raymond Fowler's brought this up. If it makes your friends and family feel uncomfortable, don't talk about it. Go find somebody that's into it. Talk to them.
You said your mother had an unusual pregnancy with you.
Right.
In what way was that unusual?
Well, first she had several miscarriages between my sister and myself. I think she had like five, which is really, I think, incredible. When she was pregnant with me, she had it confirmed by her doctor, and she came home and took care of herself and went back for a checkup, and then all of a sudden she wasn't pregnant. And she didn't have a miscarriage or anything. A couple of months later, she felt that something wasn't right, went back, and she's pregnant. That was me. But the first time she was pregnant, nothing unusual happened. She just all of a sudden wasn't pregnant, and then she goes back and she's pregnant. And she just became very, very upset. She said that she started crying and was telling the doctor that, no, this is impossible because this baby will never be born alive, and if it is born alive, then it's never going to be normal. So she knew something very strange had happened. So that was me, and I was normal, as far as everybody knows.
When she went back to the doctor and discovered that she was pregnant, how long after that were you born?
I don't know that she told me the exact time, but I believe that the time from the first time she went was 10 months. It's a little bit unusual there.
Very odd. Between discovering that she was pregnant the first time and then finding out that she was pregnant again, was that a month or was that a couple of months, 3 months?
I think it was a couple of months. She had had miscarriages, and she knew what that was like to experience that, but nothing happened. This baby, this first fetus just disappeared. I kind of suspect that if it really was me, that maybe it was taken out and then put back in.
I've come across several instances in the literature and from stories that I've heard privately from women that they discovered that they're pregnant unexpectedly and have gone to the doctor and had it confirmed. And then having gone for a checkup at the end of the first trimester, have discovered that they're no longer pregnant. They weren't able to account for the pregnancy in the first place or for the disappearance of the fetus in the second place. It's unusual in the quotation marks real world, but in the abduction scenarios that many of us have become familiar with, it's not that unusual, is it?
I guess it just seems more bizarre when you're talking about yourself and your mother.
Understood. Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. So here you are, you've done the road strangeness with your dad. And then what happened after that? Because I know Bud Hopkins wrote an introduction to The Alien Jigsaw. In fact, he says, if the aliens can learn from any of us, what they can learn from Ms. Wilson is of the highest importance. Anyone lucky enough to know her or to read her book will know exactly what I mean. At what point in your life did you become involved with Bud Hopkins? And how did that come about?
I actually met him in 1987. Remember Omni Magazine?
Yes.
They had an article in there titled, I believe, Are You an Alien Abductee? They had a questionnaire. I read the questionnaire and filled it out, sent it to Bud Hopkins, and I had been keeping a dream journal, so I typed up a little booklet of things that I thought were unusual and sent him all this information. Of course, you're supposed to send it to the magazine, but I didn't want anybody else to read it, so I sent it directly to him. And he got in touch with me. It was the beginning of things just clicking, really, because I'd read Intruders, and that kind of blew me away. I knew that these crafts existed. I was never interested in reading anything about this because it was always lights in the sky, but I want to know about them. And that's why I picked up the book Intruders, because it was about them. And it took me another 6 months to read it. And after I read it, I handed it to my fiancé at the time, and I said, I think you need to read this. And he did, and we didn't really have to talk about it. He knew. It was after that that I met with Bud, and we started an investigation.
Was part of that investigation hypnosis for you?
Yeah, we did a lot of interviewing, and Eric, my fiancé at the time, and my husband now, he was there with me. We did two hypnosis sessions. I don't recall anything really astounding coming out of either one of those sessions. One thing was going to my Brownie Scout meetings. That is the group you join before you become a Girl Scout. The meetings were at this church, and I'd have to wear my uniform to school that day, and I'd have to walk by the church in order to get home, and I would not go to my Brownie Scout meetings. I really didn't have any memory of what would happen, but it was inconceivable that I would forget to go to my meeting wearing my uniform, and I would get in trouble for that. That happened a few times, and it turned out, at least in the hypnosis, that there was a reason I wasn't supposed to go to the meeting, and I would go home instead. But I also consciously remembered once I got home, I was terrified. I would hear this rumbling sound in the house, and I always felt a presence in the house, so it didn't make sense for me to skip my meeting to go home so I could be terrified and sit there by myself, which is what I thought I did. And that's one of the things that came out, but no overt alien stuff, just missing time and the realization that that was really unusual. I don't remember anything really miraculously alien coming out during the sessions, but it's funny because after those two sessions with Bud, I started remembering stuff on my own. Just a flood of memories came back. Whatever happened there, he just broke the block that I had, and it was either acceptable for me to myself to remember, or there was really some kind of mental block put there that he somehow broke. But it was just a flood of memories after that, and I just continued to keep writing in the journal everything that I remembered. Over the years, that's how Alien Jigsaw was published, because it's based on the journal.
You mentioned your husband, Eric, as he is now. Was there anything unusual about the way that you and Eric met before you became engaged and married?
I think there was. We both think there was a reason. We met in a business management class. After my music degree, I went back and studied psychology and took some business courses at a university, and I was sitting there in business management. He walks in the first day of class. I looked at him, and I recognized him. And we talk about that a lot. It was weird because I'd gone through a rough divorce, and I thought, you know, I had this A on my forehead. Everybody knew that. A D, not an abductee, but I thought everybody knew. They could look at me and tell that I'd been divorced, and that was just so shameful because I was the only one in my family that ever gotten divorced. And what's weird is I never wanted to get married again. I just didn't want to have anything to do. I was just going to say, oh, I'm going to live my life alone, and that's it. And I saw him, and I just recognized him, and it was just kind of love at first sight. We just consider each other soulmates, that we were always meant to be together.
In all of your experiences since you met Eric and since you got married, has Eric had any sort of recollection or inkling that he might too have been taken at one time or another?
We talk about that, of course. He always talked about flying dreams all the time, and he would remember flying outside of his body and going above the house. And one time he said that they was out playing ball and they lost the ball, and he went out that night out of his body and flew and found the ball the next day, went to it and got it. So he had some unusual experiences like that. But as far as seeing aliens, I think the only thing he's really mentioned was, and he doesn't remember telling me this, he saw an angel once. He said he was working on a car. He was under the car, and it fell on him, and this angel was there and lifted the car, and he was able to get out from under it, and he wasn't harmed.
Wow.
And so that's unusual. And years later, I mentioned it to him, and he didn't remember telling me. He didn't even remember that it happened. But he told me that right when we met, when I was kind of going through this early awakening, and I think it triggered something in him. He certainly had experiences since he's met me. I think it's maybe he always has, or maybe he kind of married into the phenomenon.
Or you two people were put together.
Yes.
Which also happens a fair bit in the literature and in the experiences of people who've been abducted or taken. They run into people who become their partner years later, but earlier had met them on board a craft. They remember each other, yeah.
I've heard of that occurring quite often. I don't remember seeing him on board, but it's possible I may have. But obviously we were meant to be together.
There has been some discussion on the UFO Updates email list of late. Abductees and abductions come up on a fairly regular basis. There has been some discussion about horror stories that have happened to people during the course of their being taken, their being abducted. And a lot of those horror stories are not really public knowledge. People like Dave Jacobs and I guess Bud Hopkins are really reluctant to talk about or write about the experiences of the people that they've been counseling over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall any horror stories that have happened to you in the course of your being taken?
Yes, I do.
I don't know whether you feel you can talk about those or not, because there isn't a lot of information about the really ugly side of abduction.
I actually published a few of them already. They're different, and I think psychologically they affect people differently depending on the abductee's focus or what's important to them. I can give you a couple of examples. To me, I love animals and nature. I always have, ever since I can remember being alive. I have just worshipped the planet. I loved it. I wanted to protect it. I wanted to protect animals, and I've always just been that way. And I think certain beings or aliens are very interested in that concept, and they have tested me, or sometimes I call it mental torture. They use animals, and they hurt them, and it's really difficult, you know, to witness. And of course, you have to ask yourself, with the ability of the mental illusions or camouflage or screen memories that they can employ, are these really real animals, or are they making me think they're real? And that's probably the only thing that keeps me sane, is because if they were really, really real, and they're really doing this to these animals, then that's just total torture to the animal and to me in a mental sense.
It's kind of like the chocolate cake and the deer on the hood of the truck, right?
Right, except that wasn't bad. That was just, you know, mental
imagery. Understood, but the imagery that you're being fed when they're trying to figure out what it is about you and animals.
Right. There was an incident where they made me choose between the life of an animal and the life of my family. That's pretty tough. Probably the latest that I published was in the online book. I forgot what I wasn't supposed to remember. And in the chapter titled Liquid Memory, I saw some really horrible things happening to other abductees. And the interesting thing about that was I didn't see any aliens. I saw human beings doing this to other abductees in a subtitled part of that chapter, Room of Horrors, because it was so horrible to see what they were doing. I mean, one guy was being killed and brought back to life. They were doing brain experiments on him, I suppose. You could just call it experiments. And I was told that the purpose of what they were doing to this particular male abductee was to induce Parkinson's disease. And it was just horrifying. Because this guy was suffering. I saw medical people in medical garb. But were these really humans? Were they beings that look so human you can't tell them apart from humans? Or was it mental camouflage or screen memory to make me think that they were human?
Right.
So, to me, I kind of tend to think that they were either human or beings that look so human you can't tell them apart from us, because I have seen those types of people. I literally cannot tell them apart unless I touch one, or can somehow mentally or telepathically tune in and touch that part of them, their consciousness, because looking at them, you would never be able to tell. And that's pretty scary. These beings could be right here on Earth, and nobody would really be able to tell who they are or what they are.
David Jacobs was saying when he was on the program, they are, in fact, among us, and they are, in fact, in positions of power.
Yes, yes. And absolutely.
You look at some of the people that are in power around various parts of the world, and you have to believe it. And you can't tell the difference. You say you can physically touch them and know, or is that a reach out and touch them telepathically?
Actually, I have been put in situations or scenarios where I'm supposed to be, this was also published in my earlier books, but I'm in a room, everybody looks human, it's sometimes military people are present. I know it's a test, because I've been told ahead of time, I have to determine which one of these men is not human. And I've been able to do that several times. The latest time I was tested like this, I wasn't told it was going to be a test. I had to do it on my own. And this guy, I had to touch him physically. And I don't know, when it clicked and I realized, I believe it had to have been mental, because I actually kissed the guy and I had my hand on his shoulder, and that was the only way I could tell. And I think it was because I was so close, and maybe there was this emotional exchange that maybe he let his guard down a little bit, but I could tell. And I believe it's more mental, telepathic, on a consciousness level that I can tell, because he felt normal, you know, like a normal human, and it wasn't like cold or didn't feel unusual. It had clothes on and everything, and so it was just brief, but I had to actually touch him in order to tell. And then I realized it was a test, and I was supposed to be able to do it now without being told ahead of time.
Have you come across anybody in your day-to-day life that you've gone, aha, it's one of them?
There was an incident this past year. My husband and I were in Target, and we saw this couple. They were very tall and thin. He had to have been 6'5", and she was just as tall and very thin, pitch black hair, very pale skin, but looked totally human. They walked by us. They looked like brother and sister, but they were holding hands. My thought was husband and wife, but wait, they looked like brother and sister. It happened so fast. Eric looked at me, and I looked at him, and something clicked. We didn't have to say anything to each other. My first instinct was, hide my thoughts. You can't let them know that you know. That was my first, and just everything happened really quickly. They just continued to walk, and inside I said to myself, I should have said something to them. But I didn't, because I didn't want them to know that I knew. I didn't want to give them away. I didn't want to give myself away. But like I said, it happened really quickly, and Eric looked at me, and I said, oh, my God. And he said, yeah, I know what you mean. And they were gone.
Mm.
That really floored both of us. And I told him, I said, if I ever see them again, I'm going to go up to them and say, don't you know me? Do you remember me? Do I look familiar to you? That was really bizarre. Because, I mean, it was in a store. It wasn't like big city like New York City where you're walking down the street and there's all kinds of people passing, and they would be more camouflage in a situation like that.
Do you suppose it was to let you know that those type of beings are among us here on a day-to-day basis?
That's possible. It could have just been happenstance, a freak thing. I'm not a big shopper. I'm not out and about a lot. I'm pretty private and could be a hermit real easily. What really got it for me, it wasn't reading or hearing David Jacobs say it, or Bud Hopkins say it. It was my own experiences and analyzing them and what I remembered seeing and who I remembered seeing. I guess I just had to see it for myself to know that these guys really exist. And they are very, very telepathically powerful. They look exactly like us. And when you do hear somebody like Hopkins or Jacobs backing up what you've seen yourself, that kind of cements it. Like, okay, I'm not nuts. I'm really seeing what I'm seeing and my conclusions on my own. And the conclusions are the same. And it's phenomenal. I mean, a lot of these people I see that I know are not human but look human, they act as if they're intelligence officers, like they're inside one of our intelligence agencies. Somehow, I think, and this is like the ultimate conspiracy, but I think that there is a group within the intelligence agency itself that these hybrids, they're the ones in control.
Well, if in fact they are among us and they are here to do what they have to do, unknown as it might be to us, then it would make sense that that's where they would be, in control.
Yeah. That's the conclusion I came to in my latest book was I've seen these people, they've interrogated me, you know, they've drugged me, they've questioned me, they've used telepathy. They've told me, you're not going to remember this, you didn't see what you think you saw, and they're very convincing, you know, they're very intense, forceful, angry sometimes, and scary.
So with all your experiences, Katerina, have you come to any sort of conclusion about why it is that they're doing what they are doing?
I've tried to. I think the hybrid breeding program has probably reached its culmination. I think that they have created these super intelligent telepathic humans. And I say humans because they're obviously not 100% human, but they have somehow taken, I think, what they need from the two species and combine them and have created, a group of people. I don't want to say they're here to conquer us or infiltrate. I definitely think they have their own agenda, and I don't know exactly what that agenda is, but I just feel like one of the end results is that these hybrids are living among us more than want to. It may change our species from within. We just may wake up one day and realize that we have a different species among us and that some of us are not totally human, that we have other DNA in us that we never knew about. And so it's more like a conquer from within.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's a bad thing or a good thing or it's just something that's happening. I don't know. I've seen some really good things in this. I've seen some really, really bad things in this, and I don't dare say one or the other because I've seen them both, and it goes from one end of the spectrum to the other.
Has there been a change in you as the result of your experiences, a change in your life direction, a change in your talent? Are you more psychic now than you were before? You say you're a musician.
Former. I had an experience right before I graduated from college, and it involved a yellow light in my bedroom, and the next day I looked at all my woodwind instruments and I knew that I wasn't supposed to be a musician. It was just over. And so, yeah, I mean, they really have redirected my life completely, and I still have my instruments, but I don't play anymore, so I don't consider myself a musician anymore.
In what sense has it redirected your life? Yes, you've written a couple of books about your experiences, published as hard copy, and now I forgot what I wasn't supposed to remember, which is a downloadable from alienjigsaw.com. Was that the direction that you were pushed in as a result of losing interest in being a professional musician?
Yeah, absolutely. I believe I'm doing what they want me to do, what I'm supposed to do, probably what I'm here for. Maybe it's the main reason I was even born, but I was definitely born into this phenomenon, and my life really has been directed so that I've been in certain places when I was supposed to be. One of the things that I realized after my first marriage ended, I just felt like I should join the CIA, and my father knew somebody in the FBI. He says, well, I'll get you the form for the FBI and look into both of these. And so I got applications but I really wanted to get in the CIA for some reason, which I think is really strange. I I started filling out the applications, and they're just so long, and they want to know everybody that you've ever known or talked to your entire life. Mm-hmm. They want to go interview these people and everybody. But I remember while I was filling out the forms, all of a sudden, I remembered being told that my grandfather was a member of the Nazi SS and that I would never be good enough for either one of these organizations. They would never have me. I just remembered, I can't do this. I can't let them know about my past. So I ditched that idea. And a few years later, I remember joking around to my dad saying, gosh, can you imagine what they would have done if they looked in my past and realized that my grandfather was a SS, you know, Nazi, you know? And my parents looked at me like I was nuts. And they said, what? Your grandfather was never even in the military. And I said, yeah, but you told me that. And my father said, no. And I don't know where I got this from, but obviously there was another redirection there. No, you're not going to join the CIA or the FBI. And they kept me from making that step. And there were some other things that I wanted to do. And there was just a roadblock. It was like mental, but at the time I didn't realize I was being manipulated or directed. So I kind of look at that as though that they probably saved me by not letting me get in an organization like that, because I'm sure that they knew what I was before I even realized that I was an abductee. So in ways like that, yeah, my life has been directed for me to be doing what I'm doing. I still think that there's more to come.
Well, it seems like it, particularly in view of the fact that you spent so long lecturing and writing books and then decided to take a break or just quit completely, and yet here you are talking to us now.
Yeah, something I didn't think I'd ever do. When my husband suggested I write this book, I was floored. At first, I didn't think he really wanted me to be doing this anymore. And he told me, he said, well, you know, you've been miserable since you stopped, and you have all these journals, you've had all these experiences. He says, maybe you should look at that and get back into it, because that was really the only time you were happy. And I thought, I'm never writing another book, but I did, and I realized how much it helped me and how much I learned and how much I'd experienced. I had no idea when I read my journals again. I was just, oh my God, no wonder I'm feeling so bad. I'm really not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I had a couple of experiences where, one in particular, when we were in North Carolina, these two blonde males came to the house. They were in the office with me. We were planning to move out of state, and they told me that I had a mission, that I had work to do, and that I could not take the negativity that I was experiencing with me, that I had to leave it behind because I had something I had to do that was more important than anything that I was focusing on at the time. I think we moved 6 months later, and everything changed, and I got back into it and feeling better.
And, of course, you have run into many, many abductees in the course of your involvement with all of this.
Yes, many, many, many. Hundreds and hundreds of letters, thousands of emails, lots of telephone conversations. I remember having $600 phone bills when we lived in Portland, Oregon, abductees, talking to them and interviewing them, and it was crazy. And I'm currently working again with Lisa. She's been published in Carla Turner's book, Taken, monograph project, Open Mind, and then she was in this latest book. I had a chapter about her, and 10 years of her journal. She's a male abductee, and it's just incredible what she's gone through. And people ask me, how do you stay normal, and how do you do it? And I'm wondering, how does Lisa stay normal? How does she do it? She is one strong lady. It's phenomenal to really see how many people are involved in this. You look around at the majority of people in our country, and they're like on another plane of existence. I mean, where are their minds? You know, what are they thinking? How can they be so asleep? It's like we're almost living in a different reality right here on Earth, because there's so much going on, yet so many people still don't realize it. In a way, that's really scary. In another way, it's phenomenal, because there's some level of control going on here. It's beyond anything I ever imagined.
Well, when you look at the general lack of awareness of the population of North America, there is not a lot of awareness there about the so-called reality of day-to-day living. If you look at the way politics are being shaped in North America and around the world, there is just a total lack of awareness on the part of the population that are supposedly electing these people to lead them into the ugliness that they've been led into the last 10 or 12 years. So there's no awareness in the so-called reality, let alone UFOs and abduction.
Yeah, it's very frustrating to me. I know what you're talking about. I can barely stand to watch the news anymore. It's pathetic to me. And I feel like, how can people be so stupid? I mean, not just closed-minded and unaware, but just downright stupid. I mean, we've got people in this country who want to vote for somebody because Oprah's telling them who to vote for. But she tells people what to read, and now she's telling people who to vote for. It's like, wow. That's scary.
Yeah, but out of the choices that the people of the United States have, Barack Obama does not seem to be the worst among the crowd.
Oh, no, by any means. It's just the idea.
Well, somebody has to do that, you know, because the media certainly isn't doing it, other than sniggering at people like Dennis Kucinich, who saw a UFO, and because it was mentioned in Shirley MacLaine's latest book, sniggeringly brought out at a presidential candidate's debate. There's not a lot of attention being paid to any of these candidates, really, on anything but a superficial, nice haircut, nice suit level.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe we're all being set up for the big coup. Gosh, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy person, but if these beings are here, they look human, they're telepathic, they're inside the intelligence agencies, and military and other parts of the government, you got to wonder why and what the plan is. It could be anything from a takeover to maybe having control when these beings do make themselves known. I would like to think that if they're coming and everybody's going to know about it, or we're going to look up one day and have all these craft in the sky, which we do anyway, but we're going to finally see them, maybe there has to be core government in place, and it's going to involve these beings so they can maintain a level of control over the masses, who I'm sure most of them are going to be freaking out, and religion is going to change. I'd like to think that, oh, we can handle this and deal with it, but logically, I mean, I've had my whole life to gradually look at this and experience it and deal with it and grapple with it, and if it had all been thrown on me overnight, I'm not sure how well I would have been able to handle it.
I guess there is something to the Brookings Institute study that was commissioned by NASA about 30, 40 years ago on the potential reaction of the human population of this planet were NASA to discover that there was extraterrestrial life out there. And they said that people would freak out and religion would die and. And maybe that was very perceptive of whoever put that study together back in them days.
I'm not sure that religion dying would be such a bad thing.
Well, no.
I mean, it's just a mechanism of control. It has nothing to do with spirituality.
Yes, exactly.
So I'm thinking that might be a really good thing.
Yeah.
I was kind of shown that that's indeed what would happen, that if this happened, we would somehow have two or three other species of beings living with humans on this planet, that everything would change. Government would be totally different. Religion would go away. This domineering control that religious organizations have all over the world would change. It would have to. But also, I don't see that happening without a great loss of human life. Any way you look at it, it's not a good thing.
Yes, and any way you look at it, we're going to have a great loss of human life in the next coming while, regardless of whether they come down or not. Because that's the way all of this population of this planet is headed. It's headed to hell in a handcart.
I feel that something, I call it a transition in my book. Other people refer to it as the shift. I feel that it's coming and it's going to happen in my lifetime. I don't know, that would, I guess, be another 40 or 50 years, but still, that's soon. A lot of abductees have told me that they feel like it's going to be sooner than that. Everybody is feeling this shift, this change coming. And they're like, we better get ready. Mm-hmm. People better wake up because it's coming. And I'm not the only one saying that, but that's exactly what I feel and what I've been shown and told. And I tried to get that out in the latest book, which is free, by the way. Don't have to worry about traveling to try to get it out at UFO conferences anymore. That's such a wonderful thing to be able to have the internet.
Yes. The book is I Forgot What I Wasn't Supposed to Remember. And as Katharina says, it's free download at alienjigsaw.com. I want to thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I enjoyed the interview. It was very enlightening.
And certainly, I'm sure, for the listeners out there around the planet.
Oh, I hope so. And again, thank you so much for
and
the invitation.
Thank you for joining us, Katharina. And I'm sure it helps a lot of people understand they're not just hearing it from one or two abductees, experiencers, those that have been taken, but gradually more and more people are coming forward and raising their voices and being heard.
That is so important. That is so important. I think that we're only going to win this with more voices, with everybody coming out and telling the truth.
Thanks, Katharina.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll talk again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. As I mentioned in the opening of this program, Katharina and Alfred Lemberg were recorded back in December, and the following observations by Alfred were part of the recordings we made for the last Strange Days Indeed. Here's Alfred Lemberg on Katharina. I know that when I told you that I would put up the Katharina interview in the bunk folder at the secret location so you could download it and listen to it and we could record this now, you had suggested that you thought that she was perhaps a little airy-fairy, and I'm wondering if you have changed your opinion about her and her approach to all of this as a result of hearing that interview.
The short answer is yes. On re-exposure, Ms. Wilson seems very sincere, very credible, very honored and honorable, and it was a joy and a pleasure listening to her. The fact that she's endorsed by one of my personal rubrics in this whole abduction phenomenon thing, I mean, right up there with Jacobs and Hopkins and the late Dr. Mack, is John Velez. He's on board with her, and geez, man, that's good enough for me. But she has been out of the program for an extended period of time. We haven't been hearing much from Katharina Wilson. And here the author of The Alien Jigsaw has to drop out of the struggle for a while, and you kind of wonder why. And she just indicated to us, which I thought was very sincere and nicely stated, that she just needed a break for the reasons of sanity, to paraphrase her a little bit there. And that's why she was lying low.
A lot of people in the field take sabbaticals, you know.
Yep, it's time to throw the sticks in the forest, man. You know, give up our decoder rings and disband. You're right. Some of the stories that Katharina Wilson was talking about, the freaky occurrences, weird stories. And what do we have in the final analysis but a seemingly honest, forthright, intelligent woman who has something really, Trey, unusual to report. And oddly enough, and perhaps because she was able to lie low and take this break, that she's seemingly immune to that Mothman futility mechanism that I talked about the last time we were together with regard to Billy Cox. Maybe that's what you have to do to keep the Mothman futility monster from getting you, you know. Her stories involved these things that have always been very unsettling to me, but these screen memories that sometimes they're deer or gophers, rodents that are like 4 feet high, and you just accept the fact that you're this animal is trying to interact with you, and it's just really strange.
Yeah, I didn't bring it up at the time, but it's rather like Carrie Mullis's glowing raccoon. Carrie Mullis, who won the Nobel Science Prize for figuring out the DNA molecule chain.
That was a guy that also reports that he came to that realization as a result of taking LSD, like Francis Crick.
Carrie Mullis had missing time at his cabin, And afterward, his daughter had missing time up there and drove her boyfriend frantic as well. More evidence of cross-generational abduction.
Yeah. And all the attendant things that go along with it, like those peculiar and unusual pregnancies, 5 miscarriages between one child and another. And I wonder if Katerina Wilson has ever thought to submit to some kind of genetic testing or something to see if there might not be some kind of marker or telltale in her DNA.
That would be interesting to do, wouldn't it? And then look at other well-known abductees like John Velez's DNA and Carrie Mullis's DNA, since we're talking about him.
Right. But whatever's going on with DNA and pregnancies and false pregnancies and miscarriages, this shuttle shell game, pregnancy game, the aliens seem to involve themselves with now, according to Dr. Jacobs, according to Bud Hopkins.
And they walk among us and are in power.
Mayhap.
Mayhap indeed.
Her report that she kind of had to prosecute her interest on the sly before she got involved with some of these other things that she was getting involved with was kind of interesting to me. Her admission that she wasn't happy unless she was working on this thing and researching and writing about it and thinking about it. Her husband finally just saying, hey, you need to do this and do it. And that kind of bringing her back to what's going on. But to have the horrific things that have happened to her, again, by her own admission, may or may not have happened, all of this could have, again, been some kind of strange screen memory thing, is that when it's all said and done, she's still not happiest, except when she's thinking about them and, you know, investigating them and writing about them. Isn't that odd, don't you think? So, I mean, I'm not challenging her or criticizing, but that's strange. It's eerie.
Well, it's part of what she is here to do, or what she has been chosen to do, or even what she's been bred to do. Because that whole thing with her mother's pregnancy and that whole story is pretty damn peculiar.
Yeah. Her association with Bud Hopkins and all that involvement is very interesting, too. The fact that she kept a dream journal of these things that she thought she was dreaming about, and how this later on becomes a basis for a book, how heavily and highly interested she is in music and musicology and the playing of a difficult, I think she said, woodwind instrument. That's not for the faint of heart at all, a very difficult instrument to play. And that as soon as she gets involved with these aliens, she puts down a musical instrument she had some competence with and was never interested in playing it again.
She was going for her master's in music.
Way up there. And to just not even play with it anymore. I cannot imagine becoming disinterested in playing my guitar. I just cannot imagine that happening. And that to begin, she was interested in psychology. After this, she got involved with psychology, and I assume it's of the applied variety if it's associated with business in any way, and that's what she was into, and it was said and done and could be considered by her detractor or her critic, indicating that she'd be less than sincere than I think she is.
It also could indicate that it's part of her assignment, whether she chooses to accept it or not. It occurs to me.
Yeah. I was glad to see that she mentioned hypnosis in a light that seems a little more credible than you hear from many people who talk about it, and how it worked to unblock her recollections on her own so she was able to recall more of this stuff. And again, more of this stuff that seems to hang together and seems at least consistent on its own merits, indicating that it might have some sincerity and some reality in the real world. The unusual meeting she had with her spouse, that was very interesting to hear about. She was very clear, made mention of it 2 times, and said it was the degree of intensity that she knew as soon as she saw this guy that they were always meant to be together. I thought that was
Telling
and eerie in its own right, too. This guy seems to be a rare bird, too, in his own right, able to stand by a woman in the face of some pretty arduous and extreme occurrences.
We didn't get into it. It seems to me that a lot of people are drawn together in real life because they had met on board ship.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been part of the reality of several abductee couples that I've talked to, and plus the Spielberg series Taken, where there were two couples there who had met on board. So you can't be involved with someone who's been through the experiences that they've been through and not be a part of it.
Yeah.
No? Those relationships that don't work out, where one of them is an abductee, have been because they weren't meant to work out, it seems to me, and is also part of the programming. You can't be with that person, you have to be with this person. We don't approve. That's fairly heaviosity, isn't it?
Well, it needed to be said, Earl. You know, with regard to the horror stories that she recounted in some pretty extreme detail, I remember that on the UFO updates list, there was some concern raised lately about the real word about the horror of the alien issue hadn't been getting any press, and people were reluctant to talk about it. And, you know, I always thought, you know, what are these people talking about? Seems like everybody's always been talking about it. That's all that Jacobs and then Hopkins as kind of a number two.
Yeah.
And I feel you of how horrible they're going to be. Or how.
Yeah, well, a lot of these people haven't read the books who ask these questions.
Yeah.
And a lot of the details are certainly not covered in any documentaries that we've seen about abduction, because it's not for the squeamish.
I was certainly glad to see Richard Hall kind of come in quickly and pop that balloon, which just really kind of went out after that.
Mm-hmm.
I was glad to see that go away.
Yeah.
But, you know, very interesting and disturbing things that she was talking about. Aliens interested in hurting animals so she could witness it, trying to gauge her reactions about what was going on with Fame, whether it was real or not, and what kind of an alien could do that. And then unbelievably hurtful things that she must have seen. Horrible things being done to fellow abductees, and not by the aliens, but by human beings who seemed to kind of relish the behavior that was going on. And I was wondering, did she witness this stuff only, or were humans doing things to her too? Also unsettling was the presence of military persons, and that military persons were being tested frequently by aliens. And then her contention that after all of this is said and done, and they've got hybrid of such a type now that, you can't tell unless somebody of her stature, I guess, goes up and takes hold of them and feels of them to see if they're real or not. But that, as you mentioned earlier, aliens are walking among us. That strange story of those extremely tall, dark, angular, apparent alien hybrid beings that were holding hands in that store. Yeah, that was some crazy stuff. And that this is confirmed by others. These behaviors are confirmed by others. She's not making this stuff up, that Jacobs is talking about this stuff, that Hopkins is talking about this stuff, and has been for many years now. And the late Dr. Mack was talking about it in his own way, but, see, he was coming at it, I think, from the other end, not looking at it with hubris and from human expectations and trying to avoid all the hurdles that humanity makes on its own, considering this very unsettling subject, an other intelligence, something from beyond that doesn't perhaps have our rules or mores or ethics or moralities or any of these things, the alien in the real sense. You know, I'll tell you, Errol, if I didn't think there was some kind of reward on the other end of it, you know, some kind of propulsion, some kind of communication, some kind of computation, some kind of health extension, some kind of reward for trying to get to the bottom of these aliens, I think I would give them up myself. Are genuine questions to talk about why aliens might be here and what are their reasons for being here and are they trying to produce superior humans or superior aliens? But I mean genuine questions about what this could mean, what this might mean, what this can't mean. It's really good to have somebody of her calmness and intelligence taking you down the tributaries of these strange thoughts that I think we are only improved for thinking them at all.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, that interesting little story she told about she tried to join the CIA through the FBI and was apparently stopped by aliens from continuing with that. That was a weird
little twist. First of all, to want to get involved when you're doing an MA in music, and then being turned away from wanting to get involved with the FBI or the CIA.
Yeah, you can imagine the concern and consternation of her first husband to all of this. What can only be, when you look at it from outside, is, irrational behavior. She mentioned Eve somebody, and I don't know who she was talking about there, but she mentioned that this Eve somebody was a Mill Lab abductee.
Yeah, my lab, yes, military laboratory abductee.
That completely flummoxed me. I didn't know what she was talking about. I didn't know what a Mill Lab abductee was.
My lab, M-I-L-A-B, military abductions, some researchers have said that some abduction cases are evidence that the whole UFO abduction phenomenon is staged by the intelligence community as a cover-up for their illegal experiments.
I've heard of that, but her contention is that there is this kind of abductee, and then there is also the genuine alien abductee?
There are two different types, apparently. And then you also, on occasion, hear reports of people being abducted by what appear to be military in camouflage fatigues.
Yeah, I've heard that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Her discussion on people on this planet living on different planes of existence was kind of interesting. And that can be as true talking about the Amazon rainforest Indian shamanistic eating.
Enemy's hearts. It goes back a long way in history, too, yeah. Doesn't it? Yeah.
I don't think they're doing that too much anymore. But the point being is that it's absolutely true that different people live on different planes of existence. Just look at the differences between Christianity and Islam and Judaism, for instance. Wildly divergent operating systems. And again, then there's the Indians in the Amazon rainforest as opposed to English aristocracy, which, on the other hand, probably aren't all that different.
Yeah, I know which is more foolish. The upper-class twits.
Boy, you get an argument from me on that. But how she went from that into the politics of reality and how important it is to this officiator or authority to keep a handle on things and keep things stirred up on the bottom so we don't have a whole lot of visibility in this thing that we're interested in. And her contention then that she wondered out loud if it's a good thing that somebody perhaps politically naive like Oprah Winfrey should be telling us who to vote for. By the same contention, on the other hand, I was glad to see her come forward and defend the credulity and credibility and sensibility, intelligence and imagination of Shirley MacLaine, the way Shirley MacLaine just being remarkably unrevolting on the Larry King show. And then there was some discussion up with you and Katarina Wilson about the Brookings Institute and their report and how that's allegedly have manufactured the politics of our inability to address the UFO thing at all. The Brookings Institute report is the fault of that. And then I recall that based on the assumptions that they were making, I wonder just how bad it would be after all. And if the Brookings Institute report just wasn't complete bunk and ridiculous, overstated, overreaching, hubristic crapola, and that we should either have a new institute or something, but certainly stop talking about this one as the be-all, end-all, especially when it was done so many years ago.
Yeah, but the damage was done so many years ago as far as official NASA acknowledgement of UFOs.
Yeah. I also appreciate how Katarina Wilson allowed is how she wasn't sure whether this alien invasion couldn't be a good thing after all. She was a big enough woman, I think, to admit that even beyond her experiences, there's just something about her that keeps her askance and akimbo on the issue, huh? You and she talked about the destruction of the population and how imminent that seemed to be. And you talked about this feeling that there was a shift or a change coming.
Yes.
So you were both pretty emphatic about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remind you about the coming concrescence, the coming eschaton, about the accelerating time and the asymptotic graph curves, that all of these different things that are measured by science and scientism, all those graph lines are getting steeper and steeper and steeper, and just over a period of time, it's not too much longer, to where we're all going to be going either hyper-fast or dead, you know?
And there's been a lot of evidence of science acknowledging that in the last couple of weeks, too.
Yeah, all of it wrapped up tight with UFOs. That's all I have on Ms. Wilson, though. She seems wonderful. I was very impressed. Blown away with her.
And that wraps up this edition of the program. My thanks to Dave Frelott, Stuart Miller, Katarina Wilson, Alfred Lemberg, and to you for your interest and your ears. And once again, a happy prosperous and most interesting new year to you. Until next time.
That's this edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp. The executive producer is Gene Mascardelli. Send any questions or comments to sdi@virtuallystrange.net. Strange Days Indeed is the copyright of Random Fit Productions. Join us again